That's 877-KBOO-123. Or go to kboo.fm/vehicle.
To have a go, I'd like to be a gallery. Put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a scream.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Dana Lynn Lewis. Her show Clearing is on now at the Ronna and Eric Hoffman Gallery of Contemporary Art at Lewis and Clark College. The show Clearing refers to energy clearing as well as other types of clearing, and it consists of multimedia, including photographs, glass, and video. Welcome to KBOO, Dana.
Thank you.
So this show, it has an awful lot going on in it. You've taken over the whole Hoffman Gallery, and there is a way kind of into it. The first room you enter, there are lots of small color photos on the walls, and each one has, it looks like a photo with drawing on it, usually white, sometimes black. They're kind of radiant fields that look a bit like magnetic fields, kind of swirls. Sometimes they're lines, almost like a bunch of threads that may be held together in one place. Just explain what you were doing when you made those photos.
It's a 365-day diary project that I started last year, the equinox, which was September 23rd. And my intention was to go around, take a photograph every day, and then come back to my drawing board, download into my computer, and then do a drawing on top of those photographs of the energy I felt about time I spent at the place where I took the photograph. The room is a collection of 48 of those because I didn't want to put all of them up. So I wanted people to be able to really sink into them one by one. The other thing that's in that room is sort of this background set of my drawing, me drawing there. Four times I was drawing in the show and people could come in and watch that happening. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, put them into the computer and then was able to draw one. When I'm not there, that sort of stage set still exists and you can see it with my table and chair. I'm not there all the time. And then there's a slideshow of the rest of the 365 days.
Okay. So you were drawing with like a document projector and people could see that.
Mm-hmm.
So you would take a photo of a mossy tree or a riverbank or a bridge in Portland or even Big Pink. And then you would draw on the JPEG on a tablet, a Wacom tablet with a stylus, these lines,
right,
usually emanating. What was the energy that you were drawing?
Everything has energy. So it's the energy that I sort of was thinking about, maybe channeling from the site, like what kind of energy is created there. It's abstract energy coming out of me thinking about what it is that I'm responding to. Initially, I took all these photographs that I had sort of certain things in place, like there weren't going to be any people, there weren't going to be any animals. I didn't want this to be about my social life, whoever was in, you know, going on during the year, but I wanted it to be about place. Then as the year went on, I realized my interest became more and more deeply embedded in my collaboration between nature and how I felt these energy fields in and around the nature that I was in. When I took any given photograph.
So a lot of them are Portland, but you travel a lot. Some of them are like Vancouver Island, places like that. Tell us about the one, there's a little crack of a cave on a beach, with a tiny beach somewhere in Vancouver.
That one's actually in Clackwood Sound, and it's a large cave, a place that is a nature preserve that I have spent time visiting over the last 20 years. And that cave has a lot of power to it. And, you know, I am a small piece when I stand in that cave, and the opening is probably 25 feet tall. And one year I went to visit that cave, and that cave had been plugged by a gigantic old growth log. And for that to have happened, the energy around that, for that to have happened just in the right way, where that log swirled around in the ocean and then came and then just plugged that cave, was something. 2 years later, I went back and saw the cave and figured that thing was never coming out of there, and it was gone. And this year I went, so 2 years later, I went and just spent time there thinking about just that cave and all the things that have come and gone and have happened. And that island has a lot of history. So the energy field on that particular photograph is really kind of me standing in the cave. Like that piece that you see drawn there is kind of like the essence of my presence coming mm-hmm. and going from that cave.
So some of them are aligned, like there's a field with, it's like a cut cornfield or wheat field,
mm-hmm.
and you've drawn on a crop circle pattern,
yeah.
but coming out of the ground are these black spindly lines.
Mm-hmm.
What were you thinking of when you stood there?
Well, also partially at that time, that was this fall or late summer, and there's a lot of migration happening, a lot of bird action. And so I was out in that field by myself, and I'm feeling sort of like the wheat fields, the earth underneath me, sort of in this circular way, and yet those birds coming out and reaching up towards the sky. So there's sort of a combination of the earth and the sky.
Mm-hmm.
The actual literal story of that, like we're talking about, isn't as important to me for people to necessarily get. Like there's some kind of energy that is up and down and comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy with the story being more abstract.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the impression you get is of 48 pictures where there's always something invisible going on
mm-hmm.
that you've seen and
yeah.
you're trying to show us
yeah.
what you felt.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you feel it? Do you feel it when you're there or when you're doing the photo later?
I think it's both. And I think it's partially, like when I'm really impressed with something, I pause and I spend some time in it. And I think that that's where the energy drawings come from, is that pause. The space between moving and action, just being there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a forced thing. It's just sort of like I'm compelled to absorb it in some way. And then because this certain kind of drawing has been coming through me for a long time, I feel like that's just part of a practice.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, taking that space and pausing. A lot of people do landscape paintings or portraits of people. They'll take a picture and they'll come back to it and then they'll work on it, and it might be very literal, or it might be, and you know, some their impressions of that person or thing. The landscapes and places and things that I photographed, I come back to them and I remember them in some way. And it might change also depending on when I come to it. So initially, it was going to be every day I take a photograph, every day I draw on that photograph, and that was forced. It just didn't come out as
mm-hmm.
so. The first couple months or the first few months were actually that very disciplined every day like that. And it was tight. I felt like the project was too tight. Then I began to photograph every day, which I still do. And then once a week, take this collection of photographs and then remark on them and have my time spent with them.
Mm-hmm.
It morphed. The project changed that way.
That idea of staying with something while it's happening, you know, stopping and sort of being there,
mm-hmm.
as you call it, being present.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the room at the back, which is a big dark room with a video wall
mm-hmm.
and a big round cushion that
mm-hmm.
you had made, very big, like you'd find in an airport.
Mm-hmm.
And then a bowl and slips of paper,
mm-hmm.
and you can write on those slips and put them in the bowl.
Mm-hmm.
The video is clouds, so what did you have to do to get those clouds?
Mm-hmm. So I knew that I wanted to, I'd been spending time for years now looking at cloud formation. And I knew I wanted to try to figure out a way to capture that and make that part of the show. So I took a video camera and I started going around and thinking, oh, that's an interesting cloud formation. And I'd sit someplace for 5 minutes and decide, okay, I've got it. And then I'd move on. Well, mm-hmm. I go back to my little setup and sort of look at what I did and realize I can see the movement in that. But what I'm really going to need to do is to be there for a longer period of time and watch the gases coming and going and watch the weather patterns move. I'm really going to have to take myself and really give myself more space.
What kind of camera was it?
It's a little Sanyo thing.
Little point and shoot?
No. It's a video camera. Yeah. So I learned a lot. I mean, this is the first time I worked with video. So I, you know, I would hold my breath and lay on my back in the middle of a parking lot. Literally.
Yeah.
And then finally it was like, okay, wait a minute. I need a tripod. I need to figure this out. So then I realized I needed more time, more than the 5 minutes that I was giving it. I wanted people to be able to really see what it is that I was seeing, and also thinking that not everybody is interested or patient around that, and how am I going to communicate that? So then I realized I needed to spend at least 15 minutes, usually 30 to 45 in any given location. So I'm running around town doing whatever it is that I'm doing, working on all my projects, but I see some really fascinating sky, and then I just stop my truck or my bike, and I had my stuff with me all the time, and just
mm-hmm.
sit there and film. And then it was also like a process of just being patient.
Do you look at the clouds while you're doing it, or do you check your messages on your phone?
No, I think probably both, but mostly look at the clouds. I mean, I just started kind of really just being there. It's interesting because it's imperceptible often. Sometimes we get these weather patterns that we can see and they're moving really quickly. They're always moving and they're always changing. But sometimes I'd go back to my computer and I download the things and I'd see gases appearing and cloud formations just appearing out of nowhere that I don't remember quite seeing.
Mm-hmm. And you have someone work on the editing, right, to make them a bit easier to watch?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Speeds it up?
Yeah. So I took about 12 hours worth of video. And then I worked with my editor, Penda Jakite, and we went back and forth between slowing things down and speeding them up.
And in the room, there's another piece called clearing. I mean, the whole show's called clearing.
Yeah.
But there are sub-elements of mm-hmm. clearing where you get people to write down what they want to clear themselves of.
Mm-hmm.
Put it in a bowl.
Right.
There's this tiny piece of mica on the envelope. So when you burn everything on December the 13th?
December 9th.
Sorry, December
okay.
the 9th.
Yeah.
Oh, the show ends on the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be a nice bonfire on the 9th, and mm-hmm. the only thing left will be these little bits of mica.
Right.
So everyone's wishes, intentions, bits of paper will be gone. What do you think people are going to put there?
Well, originally, I mean, this is another way in which things have morphed and changed. And originally, I thought I'd be going around to a bar at night, you know, happy hour, maybe Facebooking, saying, I'll be at this place. You want to come fill out an envelope? Anything you want to clear. And clearing. So clearing could be anything from, like, you have a cold you want to clear, to a relationship, to something global, to global warming. I mean, it could be something as small and intimate as an injury on your finger to, you know, something quite large. And I started talking about it with people, and then people started telling me, well, for example, this friend of mine is a mediator and does a lot of work overseas, and he was going to Afghanistan to work with this group of young women who are trying to get their power. And he said, can I take some to them? Well, other people started saying, can I take some here? Can I take some there? So they're coming in from all over the world now. And what are people clearing? I don't know. Part of the project is that I decided originally I was going to make it public so everyone could walk into the room and read all these clearings. And I thought people would maybe be more apt to share if they knew that it would be private. So the envelope actually is sticky. You can lick it and stick it and no one will, I'm not opening them. And they're coming in from everywhere. They're coming in from Afghanistan, Iran, Japan, Australia. And some of those places, like I know so-and-so sent them here, this and that. And then a couple of days ago, I got some from Vietnam, and I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who's
These
sent
are
those?
Physical bits of paper people are sending, or they're just emailing their
no,
wish?
No. Well, there's two that have been emailed because the difficulties in getting them back from the countries. And those were from Iran and Mali. And those have been emailed on a piece of paper, handwritten, and then they've asked either me or somebody else to cut them up and put them in mm-hmm. envelopes. But the rest of them have been coming in envelope by envelope. And I thought also that people, I mean, sometimes people write a little note to me or something. For the most part, whether it's Portland or somewhere else, a lot of times people don't put a return address and I just get this one little tiny envelope. I have no idea where it came from, which I love. You know? So now I think there's more than 1,200 envelopes that have been returned. And anybody out there who wants one, you can get them in the gallery. You can also email me and I'll send them to you.
They do some Burning Man like that every year, right?
They
build a whole palace of wishes out of wood.
Uh-huh.
People go there, pin up their wish.
Mm-hmm.
Often it's talk about somebody who died, you know.
Right.
But it's really big and very quiet. And then they set the whole thing on fire at the end.
Nice. Well, people have been doing this for a really long time in different ways. I mean, the Wailing Wall, you know, the Berlin Wall. People have been putting their intentions and wishes in different ways for a really long time. It's not a brand new idea. I'm really honored at how many people want to do this and are trusting me with it as well. And they're so serious about it. I mean, they're really serious about wanting to know when is the burning and will I photograph it and document it so that they can see it happening from this other country or place. And
my name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Dana Lynn Lewis. Her show Clearing is on now at the Hoffman Gallery at Lewis and Clark College until December the 14th. The other pieces in the show are very different, I think. They're very big. They're mostly mobiles or mobiles. Big pieces of glass, usually white or kind of silver looking glass hanging, and there are silver beads threaded onto thread, like thousands of them hanging down in coils. And some of the pieces have bases which are mirrors, like an oval. One of them has an oval mirror with paint on it, like white patterns. So they're throwing off all these shadows on the ceiling and reflections on the ground. Just tell us about the glasswork in that, because it seems pretty hard, complicated.
So I had this residency at the Museum of Glass last fall in Tacoma, and it's a fantastic place and a really, really generous, amazing group of people, very patient. So a couple times a year, they invite in. Usually they have a hot shop that's live to many countries, and the hot shop is the place where they do this live performance and make things out of glass. And so people come from all over the world to work with these guys. And I was lucky enough to get one of those residencies last year. And what I did was I spent a lot of time in my studio drawing shapes and thinking about what it is that I wanted to make there. And then every morning we would have a meeting and discuss what are we going to do today and how long does it take and what should we go for. And my drawings were all over the studio there, but also we would be drawing on the floor and then we'd be perfecting stuff. And while they're making things, I would be directing, cut this, change that, move that. So physically I didn't, a couple of them I did physically work with, but the blowing isn't something that I've done before. So to be able to have these guys to help me realize my vision was really fantastic.
There's a piece in the corner which is a like a knot of glass. Is this brilliant sort of silvery looking knot, I guess. I can't really describe it, but it's as big as a basketball and it's on a mirror which is hanging from the ceiling. Tell us how that glass piece got made.
So I do these sort of tangle drawings, and I wanted to create something that was a physical line drawing, which is part of my work. It's been part of my work for a while, but I wanted to do it in glass, and I wasn't quite sure how to make that happen and how to direct that. So one day at the end of the day, after we had done some other stuff, I said, let's mess with this because I don't really know, and they haven't done it before, so let's see how we should do this. So one person stuck a line into the oven and gathered glass. And then he came out of the oven and jumped up on top of a ladder. And then a couple of us were down below as it was streaming down from 12-foot ladder. We were gathering it up into sort of a yarn ball, if you will. And we did that with these cherry sticks. But as it's coming down, it's cooling and it's stiffening. So you don't have much working time. So then we put the piece back in the oven while somebody else gathered another bit of glass from another oven. And then together pulled them out. Somebody jumped up on top of the ladder again. We again gathered on top. So we did this five times.
So that was to make it bigger and bigger?
Yeah.
Okay. So there are five layers of glass in there. Okay. There's another piece that uses all shadow. It's a huge piece of acrylic, a huge circle of clear acrylic with white paint, which is also acrylic, on it. And the pattern is kind of like a fir tree needle type plant pattern. And it's by maybe 4 inches off the wall and casts a shadow of the same thing, but it's, you know, it's slightly dark image against a white image. Was the idea to play more with shadow in that piece?
Yeah, I knew that piece was going to be about shadow. I wanted this large vascular structure petri dish, which is 6 feet in diameter. I wanted it to feel like this is what's inside of you and it's as big as you and you could really be against it and kind of feel like maybe your veins are part of this. Part of my interest in glass has to do with what happens with the sunshine and the lack of sunshine relative to how it throws things around the room and the shadow play that happens there. And then knowing that I was going to be in a space that didn't have any natural light, I was very interested in being able to really push that. So with the mirrors that are horizontal hanging in the room and the way that they're lit, bouncing shadows onto the ceiling, with other things being cast from behind, like the piece that we just talked about, the big vascular piece. And then also just the way that we played with we, meaning myself and the preparators at the gallery, played with the shadows on the floor, wanting things to also be part of a larger organism. So there's a lot of overlaying of pieces, both physically, but then with the shadows, it kind of ties them together like a web.
So there's also projections from inside the building out onto the pavement outside, which are on a night, and it's part of like trying to get people into the gallery, you know. Is all this dark and light metaphorical, or all this shadow stuff? What Does it have a meaning, or is it purely the realm of
imagery? No, of course it
imagery?
Has a meaning. I mean, they're both, but I mean, there's light and dark to everything. And playing with, we have different levels of comfort going to those different places. And I think the idea that the shadows come and go, just like the clouds come and go, just like our own energy relative to our lives, our relationships, our history, it comes and goes. I'm interested in those spaces. So the shadows are definitely part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the pieces that go on and off at night. The projections that go on and off at night. I wanted also, in the same way that I talked about the vascular piece of it, engaging you, it's 6 feet wide and most people can sort of be in that space and feel their body in that space. There's two projections. One of them's about 20 feet in diameter and the other one's about 30 feet in diameter. And setting up the projections and just setting the stage for things to happen. And now that I've done it and while I was doing it, watching the students and engage the pieces and play with them has been really great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and watching them turning up on the Facebooks of people I don't know and the Twitters. So it's been nice.
You have almost like the perfect artistic career for Portland. You seem to have residencies, Tacoma, Sitka, all these places, and grants. Tell us about the grant you got just at the Hoffman Gallery.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, the perfect artist life, as you're saying it, I've been very lucky. And the city's been really generous to me. This show in particular, Linda Tessner is the curator at the Hoffman, and she is a goddess from another planet. She allows me to make things happen because she's just so generous in spirit and just such a fantastic person to work with. And the Ford Family Foundation gave me a big grant for this. And Regional Arts and Culture Council also gave me a grant for this. And the Oregon Arts Commission and the Museum of Glass. And all that coalesced at the same time and allowed me to do what it is that I did. It would have been a much different show if I didn't have all that support.
Mm-hmm. And you do this full time, right? You don't teach or anything like that. You don't have another side job.
No, I mentor a little bit. I've mentored at PNCA and the Oregon College of Art and Craft program.
Are you surviving on your art?
Yeah.
And this stuff in the Hoffman Galleries, there's no for sale sign on it.
Everything's for sale.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh.
I would love for people to buy it. The price tags are pretty high, and I'm hoping it'll go somewhere else, maybe. And also, people could own parts of it. That's definitely something people could do.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing, though, that floats my boat as far as things that I do to stay alive is that I do some public work. Mm-hmm. And this year, the same time as I finished the Hoffman Gallery, I finished 4 pieces for the Oregon State Hospital in Junction City. Mm-hmm.
So, oh, Junction City.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a new hospital that is a new leg of the Oregon State Hospital system.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked with patients actually in Salem to help create work for the project in Junction City. And there's glass work there. I did these workshops in poetry and songwriting with them. So their words are embedded in the glass walls of the building. Then there's also a big light fixture and there's a whole bunch of different things.
One of the social elements of this show at the Hoffman is meditation.
Yes.
There are a bunch of little black pillows that people can... What day is the meditation?
Okay, so I wanted, like Joseph said earlier, I wanted to figure out how to engage people as much as possible. And I decided to throw it out there. What if people use this as a place to meditate? And people like that idea. So several different meditation teachers from around Portland are coming to teach meditation on Tuesdays at 4:00. Everybody's welcome. The gallery's closed, so there won't be people coming to watch you while you meditate. And there's a series of different teachers from Zen practice to people in Tibetan lineage to people in yoga nidra to people who are doing some Qigong, I think. So every person who's leading it is taking it in a different direction. Last week, we had our first one, and we had a room full of people. It was really nice.
What's yoga nidra?
Oh, that's a whole nother discussion.
Okay.
You'll have to come, actually. Simon Menashe is one of the teachers in Portland who's a really fantastic teacher. He will be teaching several times during the month. I don't have the calendar in front of me, but I believe we are publishing the list on Lewis and Clark's website.
My name's Joseph Galvin. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week was Dana Lynn Lewis. She was talking about her show Clearing, which is at the Ronna and Eric Hoffman Gallery at Lewis and Clark College through December the 13th. And it's open Tuesday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Thanks very much for coming in to KBOO, Dana.
Thank you, Joseph.
Well, all the king's horses and all the king's Cebu Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland performance of Carla Lara, Thursday, October 23rd, from 7 to 10 p.m. Carla Lara, Honduran jazz singer, songwriter, and political activist, will be performing at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. She is a working artist, journalist, and feminist in a country where resistance in her artistic life has always been tied to political life in Central America. That's Carla Lara, Thursday, October 23rd, from 7 to 10 p.m. at Tabor Space in Portland. More information about this event can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Monday, October 21st, 2014. The so-called Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, known by its acronym ISIS, has seized at least one U.S. airdrop cache of weapons in the embattled northern Syrian town of Kobani. The weapons were meant to resupply the U.S.-backed Kurdish militia group called the Peshmerga. This comes after an announcement yesterday by the Turkish government that they would allow Kurdish fighters to move over the Turkey-Syria border into Kobani. The Islamic State of Iraq and Syria is also threatened.